This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This episode, we talk about the upcoming AirVenture Oshkosh 2019 with EAA Director of Communications, Dick Kapinski. In the news, we discuss a woman trapped in an airliner, crosswind testing in Iceland, the impact on Boeing of the 737 MAX grounding, and news from the Paris Air Show, including how Boeing turned lemons into lemonade. Okay, maybe that's not completely accurate, but Boeing kind of stole the show with a completely unexpected move. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 558 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight. Joining me is first Max Trescott, the host of Aviation News Talk Podcast, the 2008 CFI of the Year, and an expert on learning to fly or purchase a Cirrus aircraft. Max, how are you?
Hey, Max. Funny you should mention Cirrus. I just got out of one of my longer flights, 4.5 hours. So got a lot to fit into that flight, all kind of in the local area, plus or minus 100, one landing up in the mountains, a whole bunch of instrument approaches. So sometimes people just want to pack a lot in. So we certainly did that today.
I guess so. Yeah. How was the weather?
Well, gee, what do you expect? Severe clear.
Yeah, that's nice. You live in the right part of the country, I think.
And we've got a slight cooling trend. It was a little warm for AOPA fly-in at Livermore up in the 90s and a little cooler today.
Wow. We have lots of pilots here tonight. Also with us is Hillel Glazier, a GA pilot, a friend of the podcast. Hillel, how are you?
I'm great, Max. Thanks. How are you?
Good, good. Tell everybody what it is you fly. I think a lot of people who listen to the show already know, but for those that don't, tell us a little bit about your airplane.
I fly a 1972 PA-28 Cherokee G, which is a 180 horsepower, four-cylinder, single-engine aircraft. And I've owned it now for about 7 years. And it's a real pleasure. It gives me opportunities to do things that a lot of people don't get to do. And it's just completely normal for me, but I never stop appreciating it.
And is it in better condition now than it was 7 years ago?
Well, it certainly has been upgraded several times. It was in great condition. The prior owner is a retired Marine Corps A-4 Skyhawk pilot, and he took great care of it for 26 years. And it's been hangared since he's owned it, and then I've hangared it, and we baby it. Literally, we clean it with baby wipes. And after each flight, kind of take the leading edges and take all the bug junk off of it. And so it's in really good shape. Every couple of years, we do a little bit of updating to it. So I've got a nice ADS-B 2020 compliant panel. And our next big update is probably going to be replacing the directional gyro and the attitude indicator with some Garmin G5s. And after that, it's probably going to be a project to replace the upholstery and to update some of that very aged appointment, so to speak.
It never ends, does it?
No, it doesn't. There are certainly other things we could do with our money, but this is clearly the most fun thing we can do with it.
For sure. All right. Well, David Vanderhoof is off this episode, but we do have a guest. That's Dick Kapinski. He's Director of Communications for the Experimental Aircraft Association, the EAA. Dick, welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be here. Always a pleasure talking to you, especially before we're getting ready to go to Oshkosh.
Yes, we are. The big event of the year is coming up pretty quick, I think, July 22nd through 28th, 2019. And we're going to be talking with Dick about AirVenture Oshkosh coming up. But first, we've got a little bit of news we want to hit up on. And so I'll ask, is everyone ready?
Ready from the West.
Our first story. You know, I saw this on the news tonight. A travel nightmare, waking up cold and alone in a darkened plane. Maxis was an Air Canada flight, I think, from Quebec City to Toronto.
Indeed. And, you know, this is not the first time we've had a story like this. I can't remember if the last one was in Canada as well. Probably not. But, boy, if you're going to awake in a, you know, cold, dark airplane, you'd like to be in a warmer country, I think. Fortunately, this did happen in the summertime. But I think what's a little ironic is that the passenger, Tiffany Adams, said that she had been a little anxious on the flight to begin with, and then she fell asleep. She said she was experiencing anxiety and insomnia. And when she woke up, gosh, she was in the back of the plane by herself. The aircraft was dark and cold, and it was moved back away from the terminals. Then, of course, what would anybody do? You whip out your cell phone, and, of course, the battery was dead. So there she was on an airplane trying to figure out, now what do I do next? She apparently made her way up to the cockpit and found a flashlight, and then she figured out how to open the main door. Without apparently deploying the chute, which are the, you know, the water chute there. Yeah. And from there, she just went ahead and flashed the flashlight on the exterior of the aircraft, which I thought was rather clever. That would tend to magnify the flashlight. And eventually, a luggage cart driver came over. So she apparently has still having trouble sleeping because she says she has reoccurring nightmares about, you know, waking alone, locked up in someplace dark. So what a tough experience.
I guess. I mean, I would have seen it kind of as an adventure, you know. First thing I would have looked for is, well, where's the food after I found the flashlight, I think. But maybe the big issue is, how was she not seen by the crew or the cleanup people or whatever that you would expect would kind of run through the airplane? I mean, maybe not necessarily always expecting to find a passenger still in the plane, but, you know, somebody could have forgotten a bag or there could be something else left that either was left by mistake or was intentionally left with, you know, ill intent. So I think that's kind of concerning. I don't know, Dick, what do you think? If you'd woken up in the dark and realized that you were on an airplane, what do you think you'd do next?
Well, I'd look for the keys first up in the cockpit, see if we can turn the thing on and get going someplace. Yeah. But you know, all that aside, that is a little bit amazing because usually the flight crew makes a check of everything and then the cleanup crew and so forth will go through an airliner to find those sort of things. But right. That is a little bit odd. I'm not sure how. Sometimes, you know, the discount airline has some surprises for you, I guess.
Well, this was Air Canada, so it should be the discount airline.
So, yeah, that's something for Air Canada to investigate, I think, try to understand what happened, what didn't happen that should have happened. I don't know. I guess different people are frightened by different things. If it was me, I guess I wouldn't have been as anxious maybe as this woman was apparently, but hey, that's okay. Who's to say how anxious someone should be when waking up in a dark? I think I wake up in a lot of dark places, actually. I mean, I'm in hotels so much that usually every time I wake up and it's dark, I'm in some strange place and I don't know where I am.
Well, and I wonder if this probably a flight that arrived really late at night. You know, imagine 11:30 at night, you've had a crew that's perhaps been up 14, 16, you know, hours or more. Probably they were really exhausted, and their first thought was, wow, how quickly can we get out of this airplane and get onto the shuttle bus to the hotel?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have another story. This is from simplifying.com. Did collapse of WOW Air lead to reinstatement of Iceland crosswind tests? Now, I'd been familiar with these crosswind tests in Iceland at maybe a couple of the airports, Reykjavik and Keflavik. And airlines would, or not airlines, but airframers would often bring the airplanes there to test. Because the wind conditions were kind of ideal for that sort of testing. But what I didn't realize was that this crosswind testing had been banned at that airport in 2013. I don't know, had you guys been aware of that?
Boy, I wasn't even aware that this kind of testing was going on there. Makes sense that you would know since you were working for an engine manufacturer. But, you know, that was also a point where the tourism was really booming. It was probably right around that year that I went to Iceland on WOW Airlines. And, you know, the volume of tourism was just jumping, you know, 10% a year. The country was a little bit overrun. So I can see that that might have been one logical solution as to how do you handle the increase in air traffic, get rid of the crosswind landings.
Yeah, well, apparently there was, in 2013, there was a crash. A Sukhoi SSJ-100 crashed. And I think the government or the airport authority was worried about the fact that these airports are in a sort of populous or populated area, and if there was something that went wrong, that a lot of innocent people could be impacted. But now that WOW is no more and not generating economic benefit to the area, I guess they've thought that this testing does bring a lot of economic benefit, a lot of business into the area, all the support people that come to there that are associated with the crosswind testing and all of that. So they're kind of thinking that, well, maybe it's a good thing to bring that back. This is, as far as I know, is limited to airliners. What about GA airplanes? Did Cirrus do any serious crosswind testing for those aircraft, or is that generally done for GA airplanes? Do you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, every POH is going to have in the limitations section a recommended maximum. Well, actually, they're going to call it the maximum demonstrated crosswind component. And it's one of the few things in the limitations section that's not actually a limitation. It just basically says this was the highest wind that we happened to have during the period when we were testing it. And so if you're testing beyond this limit, hey, you're a test pilot.
Hillel, have you ever experienced any big crosswind issues with your plane?
So, yeah, there were a few landings there, and that's most of the time when I'm most concerned about the crosswinds is during landing, and that I was pretty much at or very close to the limits of my rudder. But what's interesting about the Cherokee in particular, with the shape of its wing, and it's a low wing aircraft, is that when you get the plane down into what would otherwise be your area of ground effect, that in many cases the crosswind is dramatically the effect of the crosswind is dramatically reduced in the Cherokees, unlike in a higher wing aircraft like the Cessna that most people learn to fly in, or a lot of people learn to fly in, like the 172s and the 50s and so forth, 150. So in the Cherokee, it's just an interesting little, if you can call it, feature that when you get down low to the ground just before touchdown, you're in the same area that you would otherwise be feeling ground effect on takeoff. And there's a real clear increase in rudder authority when you're in a severe crosswind situation. It just seems that the plane settles toward the ground without really getting thrown around too much. Once you're on the ground, then you start feeling it again, because now you're not flying the plane. You're getting pushed around on the ground, kind of like a skateboard. But yeah, it's certainly we're all taught to handle them, and if you're concerned about what the crosswind is doing, let's say you're out of options, you can certainly try a low pass before committing to landing. But you'd really want to get close and be where you can decide without hurting yourself or breaking anything that it is or isn't going to work.
Dick, do we ever see much in the way of crosswinds at Oshkosh?
There are times, of course, when we have airplanes coming in both on 927 and 1836 at the same time, you will get some crosswind factor. The controllers do a very nice job of trying to line up the airplanes to what they can handle. And, of course, the pilots in command can always call it off and say, I'm not comfortable with it. The only time where it really gets interesting, a couple of stories come to mind. First of all, when you have a hard southwest wind, that's a quartering wind for either one of those runways. That makes things a little bit interesting. And, of course, I remember 10 years ago, in fact, when the A380 came in, it was a hard west wind coming across the runway. And, of course, they had to land on 1836. And they tried to crab it into the wind, and it was one of the more interesting landings I've ever seen in a large airliner, but they got it on the ground well and so forth. But the people who were there that day says, wow, I've never seen an A380 crab like that coming in. So it was interesting. But, you know, those are the kind of things that a lot of times when we ask the pilots, making sure that you're comfortable with what you're doing coming into Oshkosh, to say, all right, I know the NOTAM, I know the traffic patterns, I know it's going to be hectic out there. Make sure you're comfortable with the wind arrangements, because it's summer in Wisconsin and you can end up in kind of a breezy situation sometimes. We always like it when it's 2 knots, and so just pick your runway and be guided to the dot. But there are times where it's a little breezier than that, especially in some of the LSAs and things like that that are very lightweight. And it was mentioned before, you'll feel it. If you've got a high wing LSA, you might feel it when you're coming in. So you've got to have that crosswind expertise to the fore when you're bringing it in.
You know, that's interesting to me what you said about the controllers and being able to kind of assess the comfort level of the pilot or the proficiency depending on the conditions and what's going on or how different the whole process is to what they've encountered in the past. And I imagine that's kind of an important skill for the controllers.
Yeah, it's something that they go through as well, knowing what the conditions of the airport are at any given time. I've seen it where they've spent a lot of time landing aircraft on 927 or trying to get some of the larger, heavier aircraft to do the crosswind landings. You know, if you have an F-16 coming in or you've got something big coming in, maybe you can run it in a higher crosswind on 1836. But the prevalent winds here are often from the west, the northwest, the southwest during the summer. And so you'll see 927 being used a lot. Anybody who's camped up in the North 40 knows that you can watch a lot of landings in a short time on 927. Just pull up a chair at the edge and you'll see people come down on the numbers and on the dot and every place else.
All right. Another story, this on Boeing. This comes from KOMONews.com. Boeing may see layoffs if another production rate cut happens, according to an aviation consultant. This is a pre-Paris air show story, and it quotes Scott Hamilton, Liam Company. And he made a couple of points talking about the 737 MAX situation, which seems to be going on and on. I'm not sure how long this is going to be before we see those aircraft returning to the skies, but it's taking longer than I was figuring at the beginning. But in any event, Hamilton makes some points. He says that finally Boeing's executives have gotten serious about understanding the situation and the impacts on not only the industry, their customers, the operators, but also on the flying public and their perception. Hamilton thinks Boeing will bounce back. I do as well. But as for the headline of the article, now, as we've talked about previously, Boeing lowered their production rate in April. They went from 52 planes a month to 42 planes a month. Now, they didn't change the workforce at all. Maybe because they didn't realize or think it was going to go on this long. I don't know. But Hamilton raises the question, if this continues, Boeing can't just keep producing and parking 737 MAX jets, and we might see some layoffs as a result. I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think? I hope it doesn't come to that.
Well, it's a highly cyclical industry to begin with, and we've been in an expansionary boom for aerospace for many, many years at this point. I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but it's got to be close to 10 years. And we talked a while ago, several months ago, when we had a story about the Air Force, which had stopped deliveries of aircraft from Boeing because of quality issues where they were finding debris in the holds of new airplanes being delivered to them. And at that point, I had looked up to see how much hiring they had done. And the prior year, they had added 10% to their workforce. And, you know, anytime time you grow your workforce by 10% in a single year. That's pretty dramatic. And that was the biggest hiring year, I think, in the prior 20 years. So could be that this may be a short-term, you know, down cycle in hiring, which is, you know, tough both on the employer and the employee. You know, nobody likes to lose a job, and certainly the employers don't have to like to, you know, retrain these people when they have to hire them back.
I think on top of that, Boeing's probably making some calculations on the risk they might see of not being able to bring back any employees that are laid off, because right now the unemployment rate in the country is so low that it is definitely, if you're the employee and you're looking for a job, and so you're the seller in that transaction, it's a seller's market. So anybody who is highly skilled and is laid off from a job like Boeing is very marketable and could find themselves with a happily employed job very shortly after leaving Boeing. And Boeing may have a hard time bringing them back because not a lot of people want to go to a place that the stability is not where they would like it to be. And so I'd be surprised if people at Boeing were not using the calculus of the risk associated with losing highly skilled people at this point in the country's economy.
Right. And not only would it be difficult to replace those people should they move on to other employment, but the training costs, you know, if you do get them, the training costs are significant. But the Paris Air Show was an interesting event this year. I think that going into it, the big talk was about the 737 MAX and what was happening with Boeing. There's that. There's the Boeing middle of the market airplane, sometimes called the 797, and I think people were pretty sure that that was not going to get announced at the air show, whereas it might have otherwise. And then from Airbus, you've got the Airbus A321 XLR, which is maybe slotted right into that middle of the market. But there was a big surprise. I think the biggest surprise of the whole event was the letter of intent between Boeing and IAG for 200 737 MAX aircraft. So in the middle of all this conversation about is the aircraft viable? What's Boeing going to do? They come out with this LOI. Now, of course, IAG is the parent of things like British Airways and Iberia, Aer Lingus, also some low cost carriers, Vueling and Level, and they are an all A320 family of operators in that size class. So for this letter of intent for 737 MAX, for 200 of them in the middle of this was quite the shocker. And apparently it was a shocker to Airbus as well.
Yeah, I think it's really quite stunning that they would go away from their major vendor Airbus and cut a deal with Boeing without even telling Airbus or even giving them an opportunity to bid on the deal, which I think tells us that Boeing gave them an incredibly good deal. I think right now, you know, Boeing is in a position where they are the weak party in the negotiation. So they probably highly, highly discounted these aircraft. And perhaps part of that deal was, you know, we'll go ahead and highly discount these to you, but, you know, you can't be using us as a shill here. You can't just go and bid against us with Airbus. So maybe that's why the deal, you know, didn't get brought up to Airbus. I just imagine the discount was really quite large on these 737s.
Yeah, the rumors at the show, as told to me, were that the discount was just phenomenal, kind of unheard of sort of discount, because it is really unusual for an airline to only approach one supplier, Boeing in this case, and especially when you know your fleet is with the other, with Airbus. So Airbus hasn't given up, although I'm not sure that there's anything they can do about it. But they say that they really, really want to bid on this. But I haven't seen any indications that IAG is going to go in that direction.
Yeah, $24 billion is huge. If I were Airbus, I would be hurt. I mean, that's just that's kind of a slap in the face from you know, a major customer.
Yeah, one can only imagine that it was just a deal that was just so good. I mean, how, you know, how good does it need to be from Boeing before you say, okay, I'm going with that. I'm not even going to bother talking to Airbus. I mean, that's just hard to fathom. There's also another, and this hasn't gotten as much press, I don't think, but what I see is a deal with IAG and Boeing Services to supply, quote, a long-term off-platform component services agreement for British Airways' A320 fleet of aircraft. So, wow, I'm not sure who British Airways is using now for component services, component repairs, and so forth. But it looks like it's going to be Boeing here in the future. Of course, another aspect of this is the A320 XLR. It obviously shares the commonality with the A320 family. They did some integration of the fuel tank, or an additional fuel tank, which gives it greater range. Some other relatively minor, I think, changes to it, although they did make some changes to the landing gear, I think, probably to deal with the weight. Otherwise, they're looking to deliver these, I think, in 2023, if I remember correctly. And so the question comes up, well, what about the Boeing NMA? I mean, Boeing is pretty wrapped up in trying to resolve the 737 MAX issues, and so it isn't really, well, doesn't have the focus, the attention, the management attention that the NMA would likely have had otherwise. Airbus coming out with this, the 321 XLR, you know, it makes me wonder of the timing of Boeing's NMA, and if Boeing may, in light of all this, push that out or skip it and go to the next, you know, the next airplane cycle and work on the 737 replacement or some other new aircraft that is part of the next cycle. So I think it's interesting to contemplate. In the PaxX podcast that I did with Mary Kirby and John Walton, actually we recorded it today, should be out in a few days. We talk about this some, and it's entirely possible that Boeing might be changing their strategy in light of these conditions.
Has it been decided yet by Boeing that the MMA would be a twin aisle or a single aisle?
They talk about it being a twin aisle with single aisle economics. I'm not sure I know exactly what that means, but that's what they're saying.
Because the XLR is definitely going to be a single aisle, and right. And speaking of passenger experience, I don't necessarily think I find myself terribly attracted to a single aisle comfort level on an extremely long range aircraft. And a lot of people were giving carriers a hard time using the 757 for overseas trips, and now there's XLR is supposed to beat that in terms of range and capacity, and I'm just thinking to myself, there might be some pushback from the passengers of being stuffed into a metal tube or plastic tube in this case, that's, you know, really, really crowded and really long durations. Whereas I think what Boeing's perhaps feeling from the consumers is that a twin aisle would be more comfortable and would be popular on shorter routes, perhaps, than a 787 or 777 for that matter. And that would be because you've seen even today, I think I forgot which podcast or article was talking about in the last few days, how many other countries, you don't see it too much in the US, we certainly see it in Asia a lot, where they're using wide body aircrafts for short hops, what we would consider short hops. And how those planes are full. And that's possibly what Boeing is looking into and saying, hey, if we could supply a twin aisle aircraft that has the economics of a single aisle. There's a lot of markets that they're using right now with less efficient planes, and that might be what they're looking at, which even though the XLR is competing for mind share at the moment, I don't know that it necessarily will be a direct competitor with the what Boeing has in mind with the MMA, because it might actually be completely different markets. One, the XLR being long distance, you know, high density, but otherwise not very big plane, and which is the long legs. And then Boeing's looking at higher, you know, high density, but also short legs. So I don't know. It would be interesting to see if they end up competing with each other or actually complementing each other once they decide what they're going to actually look like.
If only we had a crystal ball that was the least bit accurate, I think we could leverage that into some serious wealth.
I'd like a refund for my crystal ball, please.
Again, our guest is Dick Kapinski, Director of Communications for the EAA. Dick, you must be spending a lot of time ramping up for this year's Air Venture at Oshkosh. What are some of the fun things, the exciting things that people can look forward to this year?
Wow, it is going to be a great year. First and foremost, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk about Oshkosh a little bit. This is a big one because for us, it's the 50th consecutive year in Oshkosh. You think this is the 67th fly-in overall, and 50 of them have been to Oshkosh. I hear from some of the old-timers who remember the Rockford years, and yes, Now that's a half century ago.
Wow.
And it is something to think about. Those of us who came, first of all, in the 1970s to see the growth of the grounds of the event, what it was in the 1970s, and then through the 80s when Concorde came for the first time, Voyager came, some of those airplanes made the appearance. Then in the early 90s when I joined the staff, some of the growth in the grounds, when Tom Poberesny was at the helm putting the grounds together, we saw the expansion. I still call them the new exhibit hangars, and now they're more than 20 years old when you think about that. But I still remember going down on the flight line, and some of those exhibit hangars, you get a hot summer Wisconsin day, and it was cozy, let's say, in some of those places. And ever since then, though, the growth in it and just seeing more companies, larger exhibits, people from more countries coming in, and it really has become, I like to call it the family reunion, that you try to get to Oshkosh at some point. Many people make it every year, but others make it once in a lifetime, once every couple of years, once every decade. It's always fun talking to people who haven't been here for 15 years or so, and they say, well, I remember this. And I say, well, that's been gone for 10 years, and so we've moved some things around. But to see the growth, and every time you think, wow, we can't get anybody else in here, we find a way to put some more people in here. And that's what makes it fun, just hearing the excitement of people now just a few weeks out talking about their trips to Oshkosh and wanting to get here.
Now, this, of course, is the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, the landing on the moon. And I understand there's some activities associated with that anniversary coming up.
We do. We have an anniversary. Michael Collins, the command module pilot, will be joining us on Friday night, July 26th. We have an evening program scheduled with him. And Joe Engel, who's often the forgotten man in the Apollo program, because he was scheduled to go up on Apollo 17, had trained with the astronauts, been on the backup crew, ready to go up on Apollo 17. And then NASA decided, let's put a geologist on the mission. Hmm. And Harrison Schmitt went on the mission. Joe Engel got bumped. He was going to go on one of the subsequent missions because Apollo 18, 19, and 20 were still being scheduled. But then Congress cut funding to those, and they never went up. So Joe Engel eventually had a very successful career in NASA, ended up flying on the shuttle and so forth. But it is interesting. So both Michael Collins and Joe Engel will be joining us on that Friday night at Theater in the Woods.
Oh, that's exciting. I saw, I think last night, CNN produced or at least played a documentary film of Apollo 11, and it uses all vintage period film. It's nothing, you know, everything you see is from, you know, from that period, from the launch of Apollo 11, the moon landing, and then the return, and including some footage that I think had not been seen before. It just spectacular. So it's great that, you know, AirVenture is including that celebration, those activities for the anniversary. That's really great.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do recall back in 1994 when we had the 25th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission, and we had 15 of the surviving Apollo astronauts join us that year, and that was incredible. Not even NASA could put together that reunion in that particular year. Well, a lot of those astronauts are gone now, and including people such as Neil Armstrong, you know, who are no longer with us. And so here we are 50 years later to have the people that we had a couple of years ago when Jim Lovell and Frank Borman and Buzz Aldrin were with us, and now being able to bring Michael Collins, who I don't believe has been at Oshkosh since 1994, to bring him in to talk about that first mission and what that was like. It's certainly a big honor for us, and it's something I'm sure people are going to enjoy at Theater in the Woods that night.
And I understand Bert Rutan is coming as well?
Yeah, that's big. We put that together over the past month or so. Bert, of course, I guess if you're going to have somebody who's called a rock star on the grounds of Oshkosh, Bert Rutan would probably be it. He hasn't been with us for a couple of years, but he's coming back. And what's really nice is we're gathering some of the airplanes that he designed. In fact, it sounds as if we've got almost every single aircraft design that's still flying that Bert has created that will be in Oshkosh. And you talk about things, of course, the long easies, the V-easies, some of those. There will be one of the original Varivigans that will come in. Things such as the Catbird, the Boomerang, some of those you don't see that often coming in. And I hear that one of Bert's starships may be here as well. So all of those airplanes here at the same time. So we'll have Bert here during the week, and always very popular, the things when he stops to speak and talk about aircraft design and his history, you know, all the way up to eventually what became Spaceship One and White Knight One back the middle of last decade, that made that flight with Mike Melville and Brian Binney, making that first successful civilian space flight.
Yes, yes. And Bert's an interesting guy. I met him and his brother Dick at the U.S. Air Force Museum in Dayton a few months ago. And, well, both of them, but Bert's very approachable, and I found him to be more than happy to have a, you know, conversation with you about kind of whatever you wanted to talk about. So, yeah, that's great. That's really fantastic.
Yeah, and the great thing about Bert is, you know, Oshkosh to him has always been a second home. Every time he's designed an airplane, and the people who may remember back in the 80s, the first time the Voyager came in 1984, before they made the big around-the-world flight, might recall that they just got that out of the paint shop. It was just coming out, and so they didn't even have the winglets on it yet, but they flew it to Oshkosh and brought it in. And there's a famous photo from overhead from now 35 years ago where you could tell the grass was completely stomped down around the Voyager. There was this big circle of stomped down grass, and the Voyager was in the middle of it, but people were just so intrigued by it. And it was a classic do-it-yourselfer project that did not take any government funding, but they did one of the last great achievements in aviation when they flew around the world nonstop on that one tank of fuel.
Hmm. Yeah, he just created so many amazing aircraft. It's just so impressive that one person. I mean, I can only think of a few other people that are anywhere near in that league in terms of prolific design of important aircraft over many years. So, yeah, that's great. People are going to, I think, really enjoy Bert at Oshkosh. Well, what about some of the flying exhibits or the air show? What kind of performers? That's the word I'm looking for, the flying performers. What are we looking at?
Well, we've got some of the great ones. You may know that Sean Tucker's come back with with Jesse Panzer this year. They're doing a two-ship formation, so Sean will be back at Oshkosh this year. The U.S. Air Force is supporting us a great deal. The Air Combat Command is stepping forward, and you're going to see things such as the F-35, the F-22, an A-10 demo team, and everybody loves seeing the Thunderbolt or, you know, the Warthog, whatever you want to call it, out there flying. And those will be out there as well. So we'll see some of that. But, you know, a lot of the favorites from past years that you've seen, everything from the Aeroshell team coming in to people like Mike Goulian and so forth, filling up that air show roster. It's really amazing when you think about it that during Air Venture Week, there are 9 air shows going on in 7 days, which is a tremendous credit to the planning from our own air ops team, along with the FAA and everybody else involved, because you put on an air show every afternoon of 2 to 3 hours. Then 2 other nights, you go out there and go back and do it at night. And that's not even including what we've developed in the ultralight area in the past couple of years with the flying activities down there in the evening, where you might see light sport aircraft and powered parachutes and some of the short takeoff and landing aircraft out there, and maybe a drone or two flying around and some helicopters and everything else down on the ultralight strip. And that's developed very nicely on the nights when we don't have a night air show for some evening flying that has attracted several thousand people coming down there to the south end and enjoying that.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Now, Hillel, you're going to be at Oshkosh. Are you flying in?
That's the plan, yes. I don't have any other plans, so I'm really to get there. So I'm really hoping the flying part works out.
Yeah, yes. And we're loading up Hillel with some giveaways, some pins and a few T-shirts and things. So if you run across Hillel, you might be able to score yourself some some merch. I hope you've got enough capacity in your plane for the stuff that's on its way to you.
Yeah, so funny you should mention that. We actually stow a lot of our stuff in somewhere in Oshkosh. It's in a big 50-gallon tub, and we have made friends with a family who has been coming for about 30 years, and they do a hospitality tent, and they figured out how to do it right. They have everything in a trailer, and somebody local drives up with the trailer and dumps it all on the North 40. And when we befriended them, they said, you could, you know, buy yourself into this and leave all your things here. So wow. most of the heavy things are actually already in Oshkosh in a trailer waiting for us to arrive.
Wow, that's a really great idea. Maybe I should have sent this stuff there instead of to your place.
You know, the one thing I have to say Oshkosh lacks is one of those Amazon lockers. You know, you
can't. Oh, yeah.
That's the city doesn't have one, which I would really take advantage of if they did.
Well, there's a chance, business opportunity. Everybody listening?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Amazon, hello.
Yeah.
Somebody put in an Amazon locker and you guys can, you know, pay for all of your rent for a year in about 2 weeks.
And how about you, Max Trescott? Are you attending this year?
I just decided in the last week or so that I'm going to skip it this year. I've been there at least a dozen times, and I looked at my long backlog of projects that need some time and attention. I thought, so we'll see how that works out. I'm going to miss you guys, but I was there last year. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, good, good. Love to see you there some year. That would be great. So, Dick, what else new or exciting can we look forward to? You mentioned drones, and I think that a lot of events, a lot of air shows, different kinds of aviation events are setting up things like drone zones or net system where drones can be flown. And I think that's a great way for people who maybe are not really sure what these things are all about to maybe learn a little bit more about them. So are you going to expect to have something like that at Oshkosh?
We are. We're setting up the drone cage that has been here the past few years, and a lot of the companies are coming in once again. They'll have demonstrations. There'll be some hands-on opportunities. What's really exciting this year is the growth that we had in Aviation Gateway Park over the past few years with the Innovation Showcase, and now expanding into something we're called the Urban Air Mobility Showcase. And we keep hearing people like Uber Elevate and Amazon getting involved, people like Opener with the Blackfly, which made its debut at Oshkosh last year, and it will be returning this year. Where are we going as far as flight in the next 10 years, in the next 15 years? Will we have the personal flying machines that will maybe be autonomous, maybe be the pods that fly, rely on electric power and so forth? All of those things are out there, and we've accumulated quite a bit, many of those companies that are coming this year to Oshkosh to showcase that because, well, EAA is, of course, the Experimental Aircraft Association, and so it's not just about making traditional airplanes because 70 years ago, people didn't think that others built airplanes and designed airplanes. Well, we've proven that wrong, and with the more than 30,000 amateur builds on the roster right now from the FAA. So where are we going next? And that's an important part for us, to say this might be our next horizon. Who knows where we might go, but there's a lot of innovative thinking out there, and we're bringing in as much of it as we can to Oshkosh.
That's really, really good to hear, Dick. And the reason I say that is because this whole urban air mobility topic, UAM, is something that I had been thinking about. And I kind of wondering where, you know, people's enthusiasm kind of getting a little bit ahead of practical reality. But a few weeks ago, I attended the FAA's UAS symposium in Baltimore, and it became really clear that there are a lot of companies and not just, you know, little startups that are viewing urban air mobility as something, you know, very serious and are working very hard. And the FAA, the regulators, are working very hard to make the changes that would allow this. It really does seem like this is coming. And, you know, it's something that some people might have issues with, you know, how are we going to manage the airspace with all of this other activity? And then we've got, you know, Amazon delivery drones and Google Wing delivery drones and all of this stuff taking up airspace. You know, how do you manage it all? But there's a lot of thinking going on, a lot of partnerships between government and industry working these issues pretty seriously. So I think this is it's something that we need to pay attention to because, like it or not, I think it's coming.
It is coming, and it's something you mentioned it, and it's very true. We who are so involved in aviation have to be to think about that. Some of the people getting involved in the urban air mobility or autonomous flying or UAS or whatever you want to call it are very powerful companies, and they do have the ear of regulators, and they're putting millions and millions of dollars into their research development about how they're going to use the airspace. So as that airspace becomes, as we bring another player into it, it's very important for us as aviators to stand united in saying, we understand technology, we understand using the airspace for more things, but we who enjoy flying our own airplanes also have to be very cognizant that we have to step up and say, it's important not to have more regulations put on us because of it. It's important that new equipment isn't mandated because of UAS coming in, and that we have to do some alterations into the rules we have to make that happen. So all of those things take place. And one very nice thing that happens at Oshkosh every year is you have this entire spectrum of aviation there. And at the same time, you have the regulators, you have the policymakers there who can talk one-to-one to people and discuss what these might be. Because as you look at some of the UAS, certainly the technology is going, the regulatory side probably hasn't caught up quite yet, but it's something that we'll have to catch up. And how will that affect us in aviation? Those are the kind of discussions that take place at Oshkosh every year as well. You know, oftentimes we look at the air shows and the new products and so forth and go, it's kind of the whiz-bang time. But behind the scenes, a lot of these discussions are taking place as well.
And those are really, really important discussions. I mean, I know you know that, but you need to be part of the process. I mean, there really is a process for making these kinds of sweeping regulatory changes in allowing this innovation to flourish. The NPRM process, for example, we have an NPRM coming up in September for remote identification of unmanned aircraft. And so it's an important thing for people to look at, to think about, and to comment, provide the FAA with your input. So, I mean, that takes place, you know, it's part of a formal process. But I like what you're saying, Dick, about the opportunity at Oshkosh for different stakeholders to come together and have these conversations like that. Because, you know, if you have some thoughts, if you have some opinions, and you don't, you know, express them and talk about them with other folks, then there's not much value in, you know, in your opinion.
Well, yeah, the opportunity is there. And if we give away the opportunity, well, then that train passes us by and things are put into place that are very difficult to change once they are set in stone and put into place. So it's important that your voice is heard. The FAA is there. Of course, they have a big facility right on the ground. So I'd encourage people to stop by and talk to the policymakers, talk to the people who are there. We fully expect to see the administrator or the acting administrator, whoever happens to be in office at that point, to join us once again at Oshkosh and take a look around and see what's happening in the aviation community, what's happening with technology, and be aware of that, not only from the new technology, but some of the things that we're trying to do, regulatory, breaking down some of the barriers. Oshkosh is a very important place where we can not only tell people about it and talk about it with the FAA, we can show them. We can take them right over to it and say, here's what's happening. Either here's the good or here are the challenges we face, and can do that on a one-to-one basis.
All right, very good. Dick, do you get enough sleep at night? I mean, do you find yourself lying awake, worrying about how this is coming together, or have you done it so many times now that it's no big deal?
Oh, well, it's always a big deal. Whatever happens, it's always a big deal. There are times that you wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, yeah, I've got to answer that email, or that's got to get done tomorrow, or, you know, did I order that thing? I'll have to look it up when I get to work. You know, those type of things. You know, we have a thing we do on staff saying we can sleep in August. We'll take care of that in August. you know, at this time of year, it's a heck of a lot of fun. There's a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of excitement coming in. Really, people are, what we learn every year is people come to Oshkosh, come to AirVenture for their own reasons. They have personal things they want to do, their favorite type of airplane, what they want to see fly, what they want to buy as far as technology, the friends they want to meet. So you have hundreds of thousands of people all coming to Oshkosh for their own personal reasons, which makes it incredibly exciting, but also a great challenge, because how do you try to fulfill that experience when you have that many different desired outcomes that actually are part of it?
Interesting. Dick, do you have any tips for first timers?
Well, it all depends. If you're flying your own airplane in, and I will say this every time, read the NOTAM, understand the NOTAM. One thing that we have this year that we learned from last year, you may recall last year when we had some bad weather on Sunday beforehand, and then the weather lifted about 2 o'clock, and it became a rush to get to Oshkosh. And it was something that a lot of airplanes trying to get to the same place at the same time, I don't care if you're Oshkosh or O'Hare or Teterboro or Hartsfield, you do that, you're going to stress the system, and that's what happened. So we made some tweaks with the NOTAM, put forward a lot of suggestions. The FAA took some of those, put them into this year's NOTAM. And one that we have that's new this year is actually a text messaging system for pilots to learn where the arrival procedures are, if there are any backups, anything like that. So, you know, I'll tell pilots right now, all you have to do is text OSH arrival, O-S-H arrival. So it's O-S-H A-R-R-I-V-A-L to 64600, and then you'll automatically sign up for updates as far as the current status of parking, as far as inbound procedures, arrivals, and so forth that will help pilots a lot. So if you have to maybe sit back at an airport for a while, wait for a wave to clear, and then make your final approach, that's terrific, and everybody will have the same knowledge base. So if you're a pilot, read the NOTAM. For everybody else, including the pilots, once you get there, I always say the same things. Comfortable shoes. For those of us who might be follically challenged like me, bring a hat. lots of sunscreen. It's Wisconsin. You might want to tuck that rain poncho into your gear someplace, that fold-up rain poncho, because I think anybody who's been to Oshkosh knows as much as we love having a Chamber of Commerce weather, it's not always like that, and you may get a rainstorm. So, be prepared for those type of things, and always remember the rules that Paul Pulverbresny set down when he said, if you drop something, pick it up. If you see something on the ground, pick it up. Be nice to one another. Don't touch somebody else's airplane without their permission. All of those things. Remember the Oshkosh rules. But, it is a lot of people. It is a frenzy. Everybody will always say, I went to Oshkosh and I didn't see everything. Don't feel badly about that. I've been to more than 25 of the fly-ins in Oshkosh, and I haven't seen everything yet. So enjoy the time. But, try to take in the things that you really want to see, and then you'll always be surprised with some experiences that you have, the people you'll meet. Talking to one guy today, he says, it's kind of funny, I flew 1400 miles here to see somebody who lives down the street from me. It's just those kind of things happen, and yeah. So that that's the amazing part of Air Venture, the fun part. You'll meet old friends, you'll meet friends that will become friends, and take a breath. Enjoy the moment. Don't get wound too tight. And if you're flying in, stay away from a case of get there itis, because we want to make sure you get here safely and get home safely.
Great. And of course, people can learn more by visiting eaa.org. Any other online resources?
Well, there are a lot of people who put out first timer guides, things like that. We always say, go on to eaa.org, click the Air Venture tab. A lot of the things you need right there, we're updating the schedules. We have an app, download the Air Venture app. We have found that has grown so much in popularity over the past few years that people will use the app on their smartphone, on the tablet, whatever, to take a look at the schedule, to see where the exhibitors are, to get the latest updates. So when we get some of the news, we'll update the app right away so people are aware of it. Because just like everything in aviation, it is subject to change without notice. And an airplane will get there earlier, we'll get there later, rain will come in, suddenly something will show up we had no idea was going to be there an hour before. And we'll try to keep people updated as best we can, because it does become really the aviation city of the world for a week. And it's fun, it's exciting, sometimes exasperating. All of those things involved in one, but there's nothing else like it.
Fantastic. It's going to be a great week. Very exciting. Hillel, we're going to... are you going to bring your recorder with you, Hillel, and maybe get a few observations from folks?
Yeah, that's actually precisely what I plan on doing. My bent on things is innovation and entrepreneurship. So since there's so many other people out there at Oshkosh interviewing planes and pilots and so on, I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach and spend a lot of time in the innovation area, in the UAV area. And I'm glad to hear about the special area on urban transportation, because that's certainly a hotbed of innovation and entrepreneurship right now. So most of what I'm going to be looking for are on the business side of things, whether they're startups or established businesses. There's certainly a lot. I've been to Oshkosh. This will be my fifth year, and fifth year in a row also that I've come. So I've come to learn that there's plenty of innovation and entrepreneurship happening at Oshkosh, sometimes on a micro scale as well as on the obviously mega scale. So one of the questions that I was going to ask Dick is if we have you went through a lot of really great material and ideas on the first time visitors. For folks that have been there, say in the recent past last 1, 2, 3 years. Are there any major changes other than the NOTAM and things for pilots? But as far as the grounds, the organization, or the exhibits, some of the bigger changes that you're going to introduce this year?
Yeah, some of the things we'd like to pass along on that. First of all, many people might be familiar with the International Federal Pavilion, where a lot of the agencies get together. Everybody from NTSB to the Forest Service and so forth have been there for a lot of years right along the flight line. Well, that building was showing its age, and so that building is no more. And so the International Federal Pavilion is moving over into Exhibit Hangar D, which is by the Fly Market, over by the Red Barn store in the campground in that area. And they're taking up almost half of Exhibit Hangar D this year, and they will be in there. So if you're looking for your friends from some of the federal agencies, head over there, head toward the southwest, you'll see it there. Now, in the spot where the Federal Pavilion was, we are taking all of the home-built exhibitors who were farther to the north going toward Warbirds, moving them into that area. And one reason why we did that, because we're getting so many home builds that we need more parking for home builds. And, you know, this year we have everybody from some of Burt Rutan's aircraft, design aircraft coming in to the Air Venture Cup. To we've invited every single flying show plane that we could find that came to the event in 1970 to come to Oshkosh this year. And we've got at least 36 of them confirmed. We're hoping for more than 40 eventually that will be back at Oshkosh after 50 years. And some of them have been coming every year. Some of them haven't been here since 1970. So that'll be exciting. So you'll see a whole new pavilion, a whole new home builders and review type area in that area. Another major thing that we've been working on is getting to the point where if somebody flies to Oshkosh, and you may have flown 3 hours or 10 hours or however, a couple of days to get to Oshkosh only to get here and find that your parking area is full and you end up setting down in Appleton or Fond du Lac for a couple of days. Well, we're expanding the aircraft parking and camping to the south. Now, some of the folks who've come in before said, I feel like I'm in Fond du Lac already at this point. But, well, it's we have expanded it to the south. We put in some of the amenities to the south. Call it the southern end of the South 40, I guess, if you want to call it that, and making more room to park airplanes in, trying to get to the point, if somebody's flying to Oshkosh, we will make every effort to welcome them to Oshkosh, that you won't be diverted. So we're working on that as well to do some of that. So you'll see more aircraft parking almost to the southern limit of the airport fence all the way to the south end. And so that's going to be expanded as well. So those are a few of the things on the grounds that you'll see this year. They're doing more renovations and upgrades in the vintage area. So if you like seeing some of the vintage airplanes, you've seen some growth there over the past 5 years. That is going to continue once again. So, you know, all of these areas, you take a look for where can we improve, where can we add some things and do some of the upgrades that we'd like to do. And those are a few of the spots that come to mind immediately.
All right. Well, very good. Thanks, Dick, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. I think, again, it's going to be another exciting year at Air Venture, and we're all looking forward to it, and wish you great success. And I'm sure everybody's going to have a terrific time. Thanks again.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. And just want to tell everybody, read the NOTAM. Fly safe. We look forward to seeing you on the flight line in just a little bit.
Yeah, I just want to kind of point out one thing, which is if you've never been to Oshkosh, I am sure you have come up with dozens of excuses for not going. What I say to that is just go. You know, you've got to go to Oshkosh. I always tell everybody that Oshkosh is, and this I think is really true, it's one of the few things in life that just vastly exceeds expectations. You know, I remember as a teenager reading, you know, the 4-page spread of pictures and flying magazines, like, oh yeah, this looks kind of interesting. And then you get there and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so big and huge in virtually every dimension. I mean, the thing spectacular about Oshkosh is it brings the best of everything there is in aviation all together in one place. place in one time. And yet it's spread out far enough that it doesn't feel like you're walking down Fifth Avenue in New York. You know, it's not super crowded like going to a rock concert or something like that. So Oshkosh is just an amazing experience. It's really, really enjoyable. So all I can say, anybody who's kind of on the fence thinking, well, yeah, I kind of thought about it, just do it. You know, buy the plane tickets if you want. You don't have to fly yourself in. For years, I would get plane tickets, fly into Chicago, get a rental car, and I'd actually bring my camping gear in a separate duffel bag. I had a tent and a folding cot. You know, so it's inexpensive and easy and fun just to camp on the field. As I've gotten older, I tend to get, you know, motel rooms that are a little bit more comfortable. I mean, it's just there are so many different ways to do it. Just figure out what way is going to work for you and do it.
Yeah.
Max Flight, paging Max Flight.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and I wasn't talking directly to you, Max. I'm talking to...
No,
you
know. I know. People have been trying to get me. They got me to go to Sun and Fun this year. And,
yeah.
And that, you know, that was amazing. I will... I probably not to Oshkosh this year, but definitely next year, guaranteed. Somebody tell Rob Mark, he'll be shocked, but guaranteed.
You heard it here. You heard it here, folks.
That's right. Make your plans now. So, but this one's coming up quick, July 22nd through 28th, 2019, of course. So you're gonna when you go, Max, you're typically in a room, and then you have the rental car to commute in. Each day to the...
That's what I have done in recent years, but there are all kinds of ways to do it. There are, as I recall, a fleet of buses that run to different locations. For example, I can't remember the name of the university, but it's, you know...
University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh.
That was my guess. All right, good. So they have, you know, hundreds of rooms available, and I believe there are shuttles that go back and forth from there. So the nice thing about the website that EAA has for AirVenture is you can click on housing, and you can just find, you know, hundreds of options, most likely, you know, in terms of places where you can stay. But I would say that's the critical path. You know, you want to book your housing arrangement now and then figure out, you know, all the rest of the details. So figure out your housing first and then build everything around that.
Great.
Yeah, I'd like to piggyback on what Max was saying, in that the experience, like perfectly said, exceeds all of your expectations, but and also in a lot of surprising ways. I camp out on the North 40, and they have set up these kiosks for electrical power, for charging your devices or whatever you might need electricity for, but they don't have like hookups like they do on the Camp Scholar side, where you can actually bring an RV and other things that actually hook up the power and water and so on. But on the North 40, it's real camping. It's under the wing camping, and as far as your amenities are concerned, plus they do have, you know, running water and showers and toilets in outhouses or bathhouses, if you want to call it that, on the perimeter in certain places. But otherwise, when you're at your tent, you don't have power, you don't have water. But they've set up, for, you know, given the age that we're in, they've set up these kiosks in many, many places, usually near the bathhouse and then some near the stores and so on, for powering your devices overnight or during the day. And you know, where else can you, this day and age, leave a portable charger or your iPad or your phone just sitting there charging and nobody does anything? The worst thing that's ever happened to any of my devices left there has been somebody has moved it around a little bit to accommodate like an extra large device that they supplied a multi-outlet charger so everybody else could plug in too. You know, that's like the most devastating thing that happened to my device, is someone took it out and plugged it into something bigger.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Yeah. It's an amazing community. All right. Let's do a little bit of What's Up with the Geeks. Max Trescott. What have you been? You've been flying, of course, but what's going on?
Of course. Well, I was just at AOPA's Livermore Regional Fly-In this past weekend. Great crowds. I heard that they had more folks pre-registered for the workshops than at any of the other fly-ins that they've had. No surprise, Livermore is next to the San Francisco Bay Area, so easy access, no bad weather to prevent people from flying in or driving in. So it was really, really fun 2 days. And I am now, just off of that, headed out to Chicago. So on Wednesday evening, June the 26th, I will be presenting for the Chicago Executive Pilots Association meeting. And I'll be doing two things. One, I'll be giving my presentation on night flying safety, what your CFI didn't teach you. And then I'll also be hosting the IMC Club meeting, which I believe is actually an affiliate of EAA. And we'll be talking about a particular scenario there, an equipment failure scenario from flying an IFR, and kind of facilitate the discussion with, gosh, and what would you do in this circumstance? So I'll be doing that on Wednesday evening, and then on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll be teaching at the Cirrus Pilot Proficiency Program at the Palwaukee Airport. So that's going to get me close to Oshkosh, but not quite all the way there. So it'll be fun. First time I've taught in Chicago, so looking forward to seeing people there.
Great. And Hillel, what have you been up to?
So, as a matter of fact, this past weekend, I went on to eatattheairport.com, and I picked a place that I'd never been to, based on the fact that it was in your map, on your map, and there was a couple of places listed there. So we flew in our Cherokee, my daughter, my older daughter and I, flew down to the Warrenton Fauquier County Regional Airport in Fauquier County, Virginia, which is just south and west of Dulles. And we just one of the places that was listed was a dairy, which has its own ice cream store. And so there, everything was listed in the Eat at the Airport, including the fact that the FBO has a crew car. So I called them up the day before. I said, "How often is your crew car, not available?" And he said, "It's as usual, first come, first serve, but we don't really have anything scheduled. So take your chances." So we did. The crew car was available, and we drove out down to a little town called Remington, and there was a deli in Remington. So I added that deli to Eat at the Airport because it was just a stone's throw away from the ice cream store, which was our main objective. Next time anybody is flying around looking for a place to eat, Eat at the Airport is your place to go. But if you happen to be going to Warrenton, go grab yourself a sandwich at the deli, and on your way back to the airport, pick up a milkshake or an ice cream at the Moo Through Dairy. And it was a great, great, great California, Southern or Northern California weather kind of day on Saturday out here. Just you took off and you didn't have to get up more than a couple thousand feet. You could see the Appalachians from stretching north to south in every direction from as far east as the Chesapeake Bay. It was just amazing.
Ah, beautiful.
And so that's what that was like the big thing that we were up to this recently, aviation related. So it was just a great day. My daughter jumped up and gave me a big hug as we landed, or after we got out of the plane, of course. So she had a great time. And there's a fun experience with air traffic control that I'll probably provide as feedback to our friends at opposing bases. There was a funny little snippet I'll share here because some people are interested that. I was cleared from a point southwest of Dulles to go direct to my home airport, which is east of Baltimore. Well, there's this inconvenient thing between here and there is the flight restricted zone over the District of Columbia. And I said, I called up air traffic control and I said, I'd like to clarify that clearance. So 4,500 through the Class Bravo direct to Martin State. And the guy said, good call. Thank you. Why don't you fly 010 for the time being? And I was like, okay, yeah, that's a little more reasonable. That was a humorous but good lesson. It's that everybody's got to look out for each other, air traffic controllers and pilots to look out for each other. I could have easily just said, okay, sure, and turned direct to my airport and gotten, brought down by a couple of F-16s. That wouldn't have made our day. So
I don't know. It would have made my day, I think.
Well, it would have made great video if you had the camera running. I mean, we would love to have seen that.
Next time.
Okay. And I actually similarly used eatattheairport.com last week. I was driving from Hartford to Boyertown, Pennsylvania, and I looked at the map and I saw that Sky Manor Airport in New Jersey, just across the river there, the border from Pennsylvania, has a cafe, a Sky Cafe. So I thought, okay, it's not too far off the highway. I'll stop there for lunch. And as I pulled in, the parking lot was packed. I mean, it's like, what are all these? There must be some kind of big meeting or something, or there must be some other company on the grounds that, and these are all employees. No, they were all in Sky Cafe. It was all the locals in there for lunch. They had the place packed. So I had myself a great lunch at Sky Cafe. And then kind of the interesting part of it was that the nav system to get me to the rest of the way on my trip didn't take me back to the interstate, but it took me on back roads the rest of the way, which was only about like 30 more miles, I guess. And I got to see some beautiful countryside, some nice little Pennsylvania towns that, you know, I would never have seen. I had been on the interstate the whole way, so it was kind of nice to do that too. But eatattheairport.com. And of course, this is crowdsourced data. So besides asking you to make sure that your airport or an airport that you run across and has an eating establishment, make sure that it's in there. But if you see some changes, something's gone out of business or it's got a new name or there's some, you know, significant change to the eating establishment at eatattheairport.com. There's also a little form you can use to submit corrections. And we rely on the quality of the data that everybody provides. So thanks in advance for doing that.
And I have two submissions to send in because just in the past week, I've gotten new information about two different local airports with eateries and changes in status and so on. One I'll mention, which is that Hollister, California, a long time had a restaurant nearby that closed. And I just met with a gentleman who's the head of either the Airport Association or the Airport Commission. And he said, hey, restaurant's back in service again. So good news.
Very good. All right, let's wrap this one up. We want to thank our guest, Dick Kopinski, Director of Communications for the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association. They're at eaa.org, and you can learn all about AirVenture Oshkosh 2019 there, coming up July 22nd through 28th. As always, you can find us at airplanegeeks.com. Show notes for this episode will be at airplanegeeks.com/558. If you want to write us an email, that's thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Let's see, where can folks find us online? And Max Trescott, let's start with you.
All the usual places, anything related to the words Aviation News Talk. You can find the podcast at any place you look for a podcast. You can go to aviationnewstalk.com, click on contact at the top of the page, send me an email. Also at the top of the page, you can find listener questions. So you can send a listener question and we answer questions on the show, which is meant mostly for general aviation pilots and student pilots. So if you're not familiar with Aviation News Talk, check it out.
Great. And Hillel, where do you make noise online?
I make noise on Twitter. That's Hillel spelled H-I-1-1-E-1. Clever, I know. when I'm not doing that, I'm often lurking in the bathroom of whatever hotel Captain Jeff has happened to be in, because I also run their Slack team for the Airline Pilot Guy. So if you're also a listener of Airline Pilot Guy, you know pretty much everything you need to know already. And if you don't yet listen to Airline Pilot Guy and you're looking around for more aviation-related podcasts, this is certainly one you don't want to give up on. So Airline Pilot Guy as well. So you can find me on Twitter mostly and sometimes occasionally in Captain Jeff's bathroom. I have no idea how that started, but that's apparently a thing.
All right, I'm not even going to ask, but thank you for that. Thanks for joining us this episode, Hillel. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to represent the airline. Sorry,
that's okay.
Let's try this one again. I'm really excited to represent the Airplane Geeks podcast at AirVenture this coming summer, and it's a great opportunity. Last year, I was kicking myself for not having media credentials because I just wanted to interview so many different organizations, and I did come up with two that I was able to pull off. But when you don't have the media credential, people kind of look at you funny. It's like, why do you have a microphone in my face? So this year, I'm hoping that'll be avoided, especially when you're going to ply people with Airplane Geeks pins and T-shirts.
All right. And I'm Max Flight. You can find me on LinkedIn. On Twitter at Max Flight. Also with David Vanderhoof each week at the UAVDigest.com, talking about unmanned aircraft and aviation. Also with Mary Kirby at the PaxXPodcast.com. As I mentioned, we spoke with John Walton this week's episode of the PAX X podcast. Let's see, that'll be episode 67. John Walton, who was at the Paris Air Show and has some really, really insightful observations. So if you want more on the Paris Air Show, listen to that. Our outro music is by Bruno Massone. You can find more of his great stuff at brunomassone.com. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Keep the blue side up.
Thanks for listening.